Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, January 23rd. I'm Ray Graff. Are you a fan of the heroics of Captain America, the Justice League, or the Fantastic Four? Or do you prefer the athletic achievements of those like Babe Ruth, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, or Jerry Rice? If you fall into either of these categories, you want to turn up the radio and give us a call, because today we discuss comics and sports cards. Joining us in the studio are Bill Townsend of Electric City Comics and Al Itzkoff of Al's House of Sports Cards, both in Schenectady, New York. You know, yesterday we did an antique show. Today, we'll talk to you comic and sports card collectors. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Comics and sports cards, coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We'll be discussing comics and sports cards today with Bill Townsend of Electric City Comics and Al Itzkoff of Al's House of Sports Cards, both in Schenectady, New York. Bill is the owner of Electric City Comics, founded in 1982. It's now one of the oldest comic shops in upstate New York. Bill was an advisor to the Overstreet Comic Book Price Guide update and has some experience on the other side of the publishing chain as a comic book writer. Al is the sole proprietor of Al's House of Sports Cards, which he opened about 15 years ago. Al has been an avid collector all his life. His shop carries complete card sets and sports memorabilia. If you have a question about those old cards or comics you may have lying around, now's a great time to call. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Bill and Al, welcome to the show.
Hello, Ray.
Hey, Ray. How are you?
I got to say, the level of enthusiasm is just enormous with you two guys. This is great.
Wow. I'm excited to be here.
You know, back in the day, back in the 70s, early 70s, I collected both comics and cards. And I just wondered, as a curiosity, which of the two have held their value better?
I think the sports cards and the comics, I think comic books might have held their value a little bit better for the 70s because of the big, you know.
The Bronze Age.
Yes. Yeah. And because of the first appearances of the main characters.
Right.
I think he would tell you more.
He being Bill.
Bill. Yeah. Bill will tell you way more.
The comic guy.
Yeah, the comic guy.
I would say that comics from back then and before
have
held their values pretty well.
Yeah. We're going to move the mic a little closer.
Okay.
Here. There you go. I get to be a roadie sometimes as well.
The thing is I don't know enough about the card market to be able to say, oh, comics are doing better than cards or cards are doing better than comics. I know that at the high end, there have been just some amazing prices for comics. Not too long ago, an Action Comics one went for $3.2 million.
That kills me. Now, you know, my father always told me, you know, I had Action One, I had the first appearance of Superman, I had all the Batman originals, and his aunt threw them out. And so this, every time you mention something like that, it's a little needle in my side.
So many people have told me that. It's like, oh, I had this, I had that. My mother threw them out. I remember there was a guy that came in my store who was a World War II vet.
Yeah.
And his job when he was in the Army was to clean up the parade grounds after the men would relax. And basically what would happen is a soldier would read a comic book and he'd just throw it on the ground.
Yeah.
And so this guy, he would just clean them up and he threw away thousands of them.
You know, and baseball cards too.
Same way. They just threw them away. You know?
He had them all. In fact, he found one once and gave it to me. It was a Bill Dickey card.
Oh, wow.
And it was, you know, painted. It was a
probably like a Gaudi or something.
Not a photograph.
Or play ball.
But, yeah, and so.
One of the early ones.
Back in the 70s, you put baseball cards on your spokes of your tire.
Sure.
I remember doing that.
I was like, I'm going to protect this one. Put it in a stack with rubber band around it. And it was valuable, so I put it on the top. Rubber band ate right through the whole thing.
Wow.
That's another thing that kills me. There's going to be a lot of regret and despair on this program. The number is 800-348-2551.
Yes.
Al Itzkoff is here of Al's House of Sports Cards. Bill Townsend of Electric City Comics. I can tell this is going to be a popular show. The lines are already loading up. Let's take a few calls before our first break. And we go to our old buddy Jim in North Pownell. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Ray. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello.
I have several sports cards and I have lots of old comics, but that's not my question.
Ah.
I have some really early 1900s cards that came as premiums on Kinney cigarette packs.
Okay.
Ever hear of them?
Kinney cigarettes packs. I'm not sure if I've heard of those cards before. Are they the little guys or are they trifold ones?
They're small. They're like an inch and a half by 2.5. George Washington, the Marquis of Lafayette.
Oh, these are non-sports cards.
Catherine of Russia, and this and that and the other thing. I just wondered if you were familiar with them.
No, I'm not familiar with them.
Are non-sports cards of that age of value as well?
Not as much. Nowhere near as much as baseball or hockey or sports.
I would hang on to those all the same, Jim. I mean, George Washington was a pretty darn good shortstop in his day.
Yes, he was.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, have a good one. We'll see you around. 800-348-2551.
Weren't the first baseball cards cigarette cards?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the famous Shoeless Joe Jackson card.
And the Honus Wagner card.
Well, the Honus Wagner card was a premium because Honus Wagner didn't believe in cigarettes. So you should probably know the story better
Honus
than me.
Wagner didn't want the kids to smoke the cigarettes, so he had his cards pulled out of production. He got really mad. He didn't think that it's appropriate for the children to smoke cigarettes.
Well, he was ahead of his time.
Yeah.
How about cigars?
Cigars the same.
All right.
Yeah, couldn't do that. It was just...
We talk comics and cards today with Al Itzkoff and Bill Townsend. If you have a question about some old classic you may have lying around, hopefully well-preserved, give us a call, 800-348-2551. Victor in Massachusetts. Victor, you're on.
Yeah, I got some comic books.
Okay.
Walt Disney comic books. I'm going to take you off speaker, excuse me.
That's a good idea. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I've got them right here in this box. I haven't, of course, I wasn't looking at them when I heard you were going to be on the program.
Okay.
So I think some are I don't think any of them are first editions. I think some of them are second editions, like 1923 or stuff like that. Let's see what I got here.
I don't think that they were publishing comic books that long ago.
No,
1950s. No, they're not 50s, yeah. But some are 40. I saw one that was 44.
Okay.
They're all numbered, and they're dated like December. They're all Donald Duck. Duck.
Age doesn't always matter, though.
Well, yeah. Walt Disney Comics have been pretty much being published nonstop for the last 60 years.
Yeah.
Yes.
Walt Disney Comics and Stories, if they put all the numberings together, they'd probably be pretty close to 1,000 at this point.
Wow.
But the thing about comics, especially the Dell comics, which is what the Walt Disney comics were, they weren't really great about putting numbers on the covers. So you generally have to find out what issue number you have. You'd have to look on the indica. And what the indica is just the little bit of fine print that's at the bottom of the first page. It has all the publishing information there. It's like with the publisher's address and things like that. That's what you'd have to look at to find out what issue number it is. And for some of them, it's even more complicated because they say, it's volume 7, issue 4. And only there's some pen writing down at the bottom of the first page that says, that's issue number 147.
Ah, okay.
So,
this one on the cover says December 1944, volume 5, number 3, and Stories.
Walt Disney Comics and Stories, a very long-running magazine. It would very much depend on what sort of condition it's in and whether all the pages are there or not.
They're pretty good shape.
Pretty good shape is kind of a rubric.
It's all about condition, isn't it?
It's all about condition.
Inside plastic covers. They're all inside plastic covers. They're all in pretty good shape. I don't know about some of them are like almost like brand new. Some have been read a little bit.
Okay.
All
it's hard to do this over the
It's very hard to say. One of the things that makes things complicated is that I don't know what the grading system is for cards, but for comics, when you say something's in good condition, in the comic grading system, good is the bottom condition. Yeah.
Good is really bad for cards.
But what they mean, by good is that we think it's a comic book. We're pretty sure.
Oh, really? That bad?
It's like, well, I mean, all of the pages are still there.
No,
is basically what you're saying.
It'll be very fine or
very good.
Yeah.
All right, there you go.
How about if I say they're very good, then? Very nice.
Slightly better.
I can guarantee it's in my better. Family,
yeah,
none
very
of them
good.
Would have looked like this.
It'd be hard for me to say, not knowing what issue number it is.
Right.
Probably since
well, I've
it's
got about 50 of them here.
You know, I recently went through a collection that had a big, long run of Walt Disney comics and stories. And they have some value, but my experience is they sell pretty slowly.
Is that because there were so many sold?
Well, I mean, back in the day, Walt Disney Comics and Stories was routinely selling more than 1 million copies a month.
Yeah.
These days, the best-selling comic book in America sells, on a month-to-month basis, about 170,000.
Well, they're a lot more expensive nowadays, I'll tell you that.
They are. People
but
are surprised.
But they've also been reprinted a bunch of times, right?
Yeah,
by Whitman,
yeah.
Charleston.
Well, I mean, a lot of the Walt Disney comics and stories, like the stories that this gent has here, it's like, okay, this story first appeared in Walt Disney Comics and Stories 147, and then they reprinted it in issue 342.
Right,
yeah.
Right. In issue 421.
Yeah,
so,
they did a lot of reprints of that. They really did.
In the late 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. they were almost entirely reprints.
Let's take a quick break here. Al Itzkoff is here and Bill Townsend. We talk comics and cards on Vox Pop. Lines are loaded. When you hear somebody hang up, that's your cue to call. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. It is sports cards and comic books today on our program. We have Al Itzkoff of Al's House of Sports Cards and Bill Townsend of Electric City Comics. And before we get back to the phones and the emails, I just want to follow up with that last caller. Back when I collected comics in the early 70s, whatever, the Bible was the Overstreet Guide. And I know, Bill, you were an advisor at one time. To the updates.
I was advisor to the Overstreet update basically in the early 90s when things were going crazy in the field. There was essentially a monthly guide that listed the prices. And
did it go up and down like the stock market?
Was tracking it like the stock market. Mm-hmm. And I was reporting to them. I was using a computer program to calculate sales at my store and whatnot.
Yeah.
And basically what happened is that market kind of crashed, and they stopped publishing the Overstreet update. I'm not an advisor to the annual guide.
Yeah.
But at the top end and for books in demand, an annual guide just can't do the job because the prices are so volatile.
Right. But my point was if that gentleman had 50 comics from the 40s and 50s, regardless of the title, a good place to start is to either find an Overstreet or go online and start looking at the value. You may have
exactly.
one that is out of the 50 that is very rare.
Yep.
I mean, there could be many very mundane issues, and then you find one that's worth something.
I'm not sure, because most of the key issues, as far as Walt Disney goes, that people are looking for, are written and drawn by a guy named Carl Barks.
Yeah.
And you didn't really start seeing much from him until the middle of the 50s.
Okay. Why was it such a big deal for him?
He was what I would call the master of the funny adventure story.
Ah.
Just these incredible yarns. And he's the guy that created Uncle Scrooge.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Donald Duck's miserly uncle.
Yeah.
And protecting his first dime he ever made and having his money vault where he's diving in piles of gold coins.
Mm. Yeah. Well, a couple of quick emails, and then we'll jump back on the phones here. This one is from an old friend of ours, Wanda. And Wanda says, I have several large sports cards from the 1960s, I believe. They are the size of an index card. I think they're called Topps Giants. The ones I have left are Whitey Ford, Sandy Koufax, Tony Oliva, a few others. I sold the Mickey Mantle one. Yes, it's well established that Wanda's not a Yankees fan. I got $35 for the Mickey Mantle card a number of years ago. I bought them myself. They are in very good shape. Have you seen these cards before?
Yes, I have. I've seen those before. They're called 64 Tops Giants. They were produced in 1964, separate from their actual 64 Tops cards.
Yeah. Are they worth anything?
Yeah, of course they are. They're really cool. They're one of the few sets that's really affordable from the 60s that you can put together, relatively inexpensive.
All right. This one's from Philip. First off, I want to say... start off by saying that as an active Vox Pop listener and comic book collector, I've been waiting for a show like this. Well, there you go, Philip. Philip writes, I had a question in regards to framing and hanging some comic books that I own. I have some books that are of high sentimental value to me and that I've always wanted to display. I was just wondering what you would recommend as frames for hanging them. And that's from Philip.
I think that would more depend on what your aesthetic sensibilities are. The only thing I would recommend is that there's a special type of refractive glass that keeps sunlight from fading the comics.
Ultraviolet. That's what you want to use. You really do. I do the memorabilia, and you really want to protect it because it will destroy. The sun does unbelievable damage to your autographs and your comic books. It really does.
Moisture and sunlight are
that's the enemy.
And baseball cards, big enemies.
Yeah. Big enemy.
Let's go back to the phones and Robert in Niskayuna. Robert.
Hi there.
Hello.
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 How are you?
Hi. Good. I wanted to ask, in May of 1956, I went to a very reputable sports store where I lived near New York City in New Rochelle, New York, and bought a 1955 Dodger autographed baseball. And I have shown it to a couple of people like the gentlemen that are on the show today, although not to them. And I'm always confronted with, well, how do you know that's really their signatures?
Yeah.
I guess I was only 11 years old when I bought it. And I didn't know then, but, I mean, it was a very reputable sports store in the area, the main sports store in our area for clothing, for bats and balls and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Including autographed baseballs. Now, I have seen some of the names in other circumstances, and it did look the same, like Duke Snyder's signature, for instance. But I'm wondering, is there some way to authenticate
these
signatures?
Yes, there is. You could easily get that ball authenticated. What you have to do is contact PSA. PSA DNA and JSA are probably the best companies out there that will authenticate and certify your ball. Without the certification, though, that ball really does not have much value, because even though you're telling me that you got the ball back in the day, it's really hard to determine that. What you have to do is probably send it out or go to the show in person and give it to one of the head graders. There is a gentleman named Kevin Keating that works for PSA. He's really good. He could look at the ball for you and give you a letter of authenticity.
Oh, nice.
So I would contact them.
Okay. Well, thanks, Robert, for that call. The authenticators are now present at Major League Baseball games when things are going on. You know,
really?
A big milestone is going to be hit. If a ball is maybe it's a 300th or 3,000th hit,
they will
absolutely immediately
right.
take that ball and authenticate it. It's amazing.
It is amazing.
It's quite a business. And then there are still frauds out there.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, there is.
You hear about that Eli Manning case where it was memorabilia game-worn, and there was a big lawsuit about that, and I think ultimately he prevailed in that. But I guess frauds are tough. It would be a little tougher to fraud
Not
fake a comic.
Not necessarily. I've seen counterfeit comic books.
Really?
Really?
Yes.
You don't see Stan Lee's autograph that are counterfeit.
Well, no, not a counterfeit. comic.
Okay.
There was a black and white comic book that came out in the late 70s called Cerebus. Oh. And there were only 2,000 printed of the first issue, but it got more popular. So everyone was hunting for that first issue. It got to be like a $300 book. And in the early 80s, that was real money.
Yeah, big money.
And a bunch of Cerebus number one started showing up at local shows. and I bought one because I needed a number one. And I got a call from my distributor saying that there was a bunch of them being sold all up and down the East Coast. And the thinking was, is they were counterfeit, because this is just too many, because there are only 2,000 printed. And I took a look at my copy and I said, you know what? I can tell the difference between a comic book in mint condition and a brand new comic This was a brand new comic.
Ooh, so you were taken in.
Yeah, I was taken in. And furthermore, the way you could tell the counterfeit from the real one is the counterfeit was a much better printing job.
Ah, interesting. Well, let's go back to the
better quality
phones.
Paper, probably.
Yes.
Number here is 800-348-2551. Dina in Newburgh. Dina, you're on.
Hello. Good afternoon. Thank you.
Sure.
I am sorting my comic books as I'm waiting.
Good.
I have about 80, and they're Marvels. And they're 78 and 79. They're not pristine condition, but they're good. I mean, again, I know that's relative.
Yeah.
I would like someone to look at them and see what I have, and I need to get rid of them.
Well, the questions I would ask is how many do you have?
80.
About 80. Oh.
About 80, okay.
And a lot of different titles from, I don't know the stuff, Avengers, Captain America, Captain Marvel, The Hulk.
Those are all Marvel titles.
Those are all good titles.
Do you happen to know offhand what the cover prices are?
25 cents, 35 cents.
25 cents. Okay, so we're talking comics from the mid-70s. The mid-70s. There are some valuable books in that time period. I don't know if you have them. I'd need to take a look at what you have and see what titles and issue numbers and condition.
All right, just tell me, I'm sorry, what do you mean by issue numbers? As you were talking to another person, I looked on the bottom of the first page and it just says Marvel. It says volume one, number like 112.
The Marvels should have the numbers on the top.
Yeah, you have the newer
Marvels
comics.
Have the numbers on the top, but that, if it said volume number one, issue number 112, that's issue number 112 of that particular comic.
It says, on this one, this is X-Men. I'm just taking it here. It says 112 August, and it says 02, you know, it has another number underneath. So I'm not sure which number you're referring to. Should I look for a different
number? It's issue one. It sounds like you've got issue 112 there. It's probably 35 cents on the cover.
Yes, it is.
It's one of the Chris Claremont, John Byrne, X-Men's. I could probably even describe the cover
for
you.
For Pete's sake, really?
Yeah.
You are a geek. Holy mackerel.
Oh, man.
Whoa.
It comes with the job. It comes with the job.
Yeah.
But condition is all important.
Condition is the thing.
Yes, no, I understand. So I know that someone would have to see them, and I'd like to make arrangements to do that.
Okay, well, we couldn't do that on the air, but there are plenty of places
near
you as well.
I
guess that's a good question, though. How do you find a reputable person to do this sort of thing?
Well, that's the question, isn't it?
Yes.
Basically, someone who's been in business a long time, you probably have a pretty good idea that most of the people in my business who were kind of sketchy, they shook out.
They don't last long.
When times get tough, they shake out.
Okay, that's just the opposite in radio, oddly enough.
And reputation is everything anyways.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much if you ruin your reputation, you might as well just close up.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Bill Townsend of Electric City Comics is here, and Al Itzkoff of Al's House of Sports Cards. They're both in Schenectady, New York, although they're both here right now here in Albany, New York. Let's go to Jim in Coxsackie. Jim, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, guys. We have Marvel, the Stephen King, the Dark Tower, the seven of them. They've never been opened. They're in the plastic package and scotch taped on the back. We bought two sets, one to look at and one to save. And I was just wondering about their value. We got all seven of them.
Okay. Most modern comics don't really hold their values very well, unfortunately. The Dark Tower, I think, was from the early to mid-aughties. Marvel produced a lot of Dark Tower books, a lot of Stephen King adaptations, and eventually they just kind of put out too many and they stopped selling, and so they stopped doing it. My experience with them is they really haven't held their value. We haven't had people coming in looking for them.
At this time, though, couldn't that 20 years from now that be completely different?
Very easily. Very easily. You know, if I could predict the future, I'd be doing something else.
And that would be a different show, but we'd have you on all the same.
Yeah.
All right, Jim. So there you go.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. And who has been waiting the longest? Looks like Mike in Saratoga Springs. Mike.
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm staring here. It's just three little packs of unopened Topps 1987 baseball packs, and I'm I have a feeling that the little ad on there that said I could have won a trip to the 1988 spring training would have been the real reason I should open these, but I never did open them. So I'm just wondering, does it matter at this point, open or unopened?
You're better off just keeping them sealed.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because there's so many of those cards, 1987, that's heavily mass-produced. At one time, that was considered one of the better rookie crops because of Barry Bonds, Barry Larkin, and Will Clark, and Bo Jackson. But, they made way too many.
All right, just hold on to them and pass them down.
Exactly.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Mike. The number here is 800-348-2551. That's the thing about rookie cards. And I would pick up packs of cards throughout the 80s and 90s, and even nowadays I'll even pick up a pack. You say,
sure.
Oh, my gosh, I got a Mark McGwire, or yeah. I got this and that. And then the steroids
came.
The
steroids just killed the market.
The Roger Clemens rookie that I got, it went down the tubes.
It went down the tubes. A lot of that era went down the tubes.
Any chance of a rebound on those?
Maybe in 3 years when they get elected. Some of them will.
You think they'll get elected?
Some of them probably will.
We had this discussion in the newsroom.
But Bonds was a great player before he started taking them.
So why take them?
Because he saw the attention that McGwire and Sosa got, I think.
McGwire hit 49 in his rookie year. He didn't need them either.
Yeah, he didn't need them either.
That's another show.
Yeah, that is another show.
It was kind
you're
of a
right.
competitive thing. It's like,
yeah,
well,
it
everyone
was
else is doing it, I should do it too.
Yeah,
all right,
you're right.
Let's
Bill.
Jump over to line 5 and Phil in Albany. Phil.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hello. Good.
Question. I've visited many memorabilia shops over the years. No one ever was able to give me an answer. I've got a set of 1984 Topps football. It's the entire set. However, it's in 3 uncut sheets.
Okay.
So I'm just kind of curious. I know it's got Marino and Elway rookies and Ronnie Lott, but I'm just curious as to, is there any value to these things?
Yeah, of course. There are certain collectors that like uncut sheets, and they collect them for investment, or they just like the set because it's just a great set, 1984. And you forget there's also Eric Dickerson rookie in there, too.
Ew.
Yeah. So it wasn't too shabby.
No, not at all. Any approximate value you'd throw on that?
84. If you have Marino, Elway, I would think they're worth a few hundred dollars, I think. You know?
Like I
it
said,
also depends on the condition of the sheet, too.
They've been rolled up in a cardboard tube since I got them in the mid-90s.
Okay.
So they rarely see light. They're always dry.
Yeah, so they sound like they're in decent shape.
Okay.
Yeah, they have value. It's a nice thing to have.
Phil, thanks for the call. Now we jump over to Warwick and Nina. Nina, you're on.
Hi. Two quick questions. Thank you for taking my call,
sure.
too. I have Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera rookie cards. I don't know. Are they two new players? Or?
No, they're great rookie cards. They're one of the few cards that are actually worth any money from that really bad era of baseball cards, you know? Over the mass production really destroyed the market. But the Mariano...
Right.
The Mariano Rivera and Jeter are very good cards. Those are good.
Yeah.
And I also, I have a Wade Boggs rookie card and signed baseball, and the card is, it looks like it was kind of misprinted, like the edges are different than other cards. Is that worth any more or less?
I can't really determine that without looking at
okay.
it. That's the problem.
Yeah, I guess you need to talk to a professional, Nina, on that one. But hang on to the Rivera and the Jeter cards. Thank you for the call. You know, you mentioned the mass production of cards. Back somewhere in the 80s or 90s, suddenly there were all these. In the old days, it was you got Topps cards.
Yeah.
And then Fleer, okay, fine.
Well,
Upper
Deck came into the market,
right.
And they just went crazy. They turned the whole market upside down. They came out with the premium. It was like $1, you know, a pack, which was unheard of then.
Yeah.
People went. So Topps was like, oh, my God, we got to do something about this. So they created Topps Stadium Club.
Yep.
And then that product in 1991, just like unbelievable. It was Kodak photography.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
And there are some beautiful cards. And there's also a long list of cards that have little bits of jersey and a bit of a game, a game used bat and all this other stuff. Are those holding their value?
Some are and some are just not. You know,
depending on the player?
Depending on the player,
so
exactly.
If it's a Hall of Famer, let's say you have a shot of having something there.
Yes, or if you have like the special jersey that's signed by the player and his uniform and it's numbered. So that adds an aurora to the card. You know, people are like, oh my God, this is beautiful. Some of them are beautiful and they hold value, and some of them are just, why did they make that?
Bill Townsend is here of Electric City Comics. Al Itzkoff of Al's House of Sports Cards. We'll take a quick break here on Vox Pop and then hit the home stretch. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. Wait for it. There we go. Key change, you see. Modulation. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is the number. Sports cards and comics today on the show. Bill Townsend of Electric City Comics. Al Itzkoff of Al's House of Sports Cards. And the lines are crazy, crazy loaded here. Same we had yesterday on the Antique Show. So I think maybe in the future we'll do a whole collectible week. We'll get the stamp and coin guys on one day. We'll get you guys back. We'll get antiques, and we'll do that. But in the meantime, we'll try to get through as many calls as we can. I know we'll leave some people on the line. This email came in from Matt, and Matt writes, "Hi, I have a box full of about 30 DC and Marvel comics, mainly from 1971, some from 69 and 73. Most are priced 15 cents, some 12, some 25. No torn or missing pages. How do I find out if any are worth anything? I'm in Sullivan County, so good luck to me." And that's from Matt.
Sullivan County. I don't know of any stores in Sullivan County.
Go to another county.
Yeah, go to another county. if you find yourself near a big city, see if there's any stores there. See if they can't give you an idea.
Can you grade these online? Condition one thing. Just putting aside condition. But can you get a general... Is there like an Overstreet online where you can actually go, oh, okay, I have Detective Comics 427. It's worth this in mint. Mine isn't mint. I'll knock off X percentage. But, I mean, is there a resource online that you can do that?
You can try looking things up on Google. Like they said yesterday, Google is your friend.
Yeah.
But you're going to find widely varying prices. It all depends on who you talk to.
Okay.
You could check eBay, too. Just hit completed listings.
eBay will drive you insane.
You'll have to look at 1,000 listings and then take an average.
No, it's like I was telling a friend of mine. I was looking up the first appearance of Amazing Spider-Man, Amazing Fantasy 15. Someone
huge
had
book.
A coverless one on there. Coverless is not really collectible. They wanted $11,000.
Oh,
my goodness.
All right, let's go back to the phones here, and we go to Steve in Kingston. Steve.
Yeah, hi. Back, I believe it's the late 60s. It could be the early 70s. My father bought a set of cards that came out just to commemorate the old Negro League. And if you bought the entire set, which he did, it came with a booklet describing, giving you the history of the great players in the Negro Leagues and stuff like that. It's been untouched, sitting in a shoebox since that time. Sometimes things that are made to be collectible are not worth anything, but he had never seen anything like it before, and that's why he bought them. I was wondering what the story is with that.
Are they TCMA cards or Renito Glasso? I mean, there should be something in the back of the cards that states who made them.
I'm in the truck now driving, so...
Okay. Well, I definitely don't want you to look if you're driving.
That's a good plan.
No, I mean, they're at home, so I couldn't look anyway, right?
But there could be some value to those, depending on...
Depending. You know, some collectors do like Negro League collectibles because they really didn't have cards for the players back in those days. I would... maybe give us a call another time and tell us, you know, what make they are.
On your return engagement, maybe Steve will be prepared for that one. All right, Steve, hey, good luck with that, and call us next time these guys are on. It's 800-348-2551. Kay in the Berkshires. Kay, you're on.
Hi, I have a question for Al. I have three baseball cards and one Bruins card. That's my collection. I have a 1971 NL RBI Leaders with Joe Torre, Willie Stargell, and Hank Aarons.
Mm-hmm. I love that card.
Yeah, great card.
Yep. And so anything about that card?
It depends on the condition. It could be worth a few dollars. It's not really that rare because it's just a leader
it's
card.
Like number 87 of something.
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, well, it's a 752 card set. So.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Then I have a Mike Flanagan pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays. And I know he died.
Did he?
I went to high school
I didn't
near
know
him.
That.
Oh, okay. That was toward the end of his career, I would imagine.
I hope so.
Yeah, well, that was years back.
No, not when he died, then when he was on the Blue Jays.
Oh.
I think that was.
Oh, yeah.
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 Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so that's probably not a
No, it's not really that valuable, at all.
It's just cool for me to have because I knew him. We played against him. And then I just have a Boston Red Sox Jeff Reardon card. But it was made by, it looks like, Pepsi Cola or something.
Yeah, it's miscellaneous card. It's probably worth between, 25 cents to 75 cents.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
You said you had a hockey card?
I got one hockey card, Rick Middleton.
Oh, Boston Bruins.
Right wing, yep. And
I'm going to
take it out of the sleeve.
All right.
Oh, that also has a number on it.
Okay.
So that's not nothing. Okay, I just wanted to know if I can put them back in their box. I have a lot of Beatles and Elvis cards, but you're not into that. So.
Yeah, those are good. Okay. Those are better than the...
Hang on to those.
That's good stuff. Beatles, Elvis.
Oh, yeah. Kay, thanks for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Al Itzkoff is here. Bill Townsend is here. We talk comics and sports cards collecting today on the program. And now we go over to Bob in Stockbridge. Bob.
Oh, yeah. Hey, guys. I got a couple of things here I wanted to ask you about. I got a baseball signed by Joe DiMaggio.
Cool.
Very cool. Yeah, and it's the stamp is official American League ball. It's a Rawlings ball. And I can't quite make it out, but you know how the commissioners sign it. It's
Bobby Brown.
That's right. Body president.
Mm-hmm.
And, cushion cork center. And I've also got a Johnny Mize signature. The legend is my mother was at Toots Shores in New York. And
he
was there, and she ran up and got his autograph on a menu. So I've got that.
Toots Shores menu?
Well, no, somebody cut it out, cut 4 inches, around the signature. And framed it, but but it's on an actual menu.
That is great.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
Is there any value to those?
Yeah, there's value to DiMaggio. I mean, it's probably going to be considered as a cut, which is probably like a $150 item.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a cut.
You what know,
if
that
it's
mean?
Certified, PSA grades them. Obviously, it's not an 8x10 photo or.
It's a ball. The DiMaggio is a ball.
It's Mize not a menu.
Johnny Mize is off the menu.
The DiMaggio ball. Is it certified by any chance?
No, I don't believe so. It's been handed down my family.
Can he get it certified?
Yes, he can. Absolutely. Oh. And I think you should get it certified because Joey D is a nice autograph piece to have in a collection.
Yeah, so I go to that company you mentioned earlier.
Yes, absolutely, I would.
And what do you do, mail? I mean, I'd be afraid to let it out of my sight.
You could mail it, or you could just go to a show. They have local shows at White Plains, New York, where you can just, go over there, and they have their own booth, PSA. You can just hand it over to them,
and they'll get it done
in 2 hours.
There are some regionally. I mean, Stockbridge is a pretty good distance from White Plains.
True.
Yeah, it is.
All right,
true.
Maybe
there's
Boston.
Something.
And those shows are advertised, right?
Yes, they are. There's shows in Boston, too.
All right. Hey, Bob, thanks for the call, and good luck with that. Some great stuff.
Yeah,
Johnny
take
Mize.
Care, Bob.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Jim in Matamoras, Pennsylvania. Jim.
What's the definition of a sports car? Do muscle cars qualify, and what's a spider?
Huh?
I don't understand. Muscle car?
We'll need our decoder ring. Let's start again. What?
What is the definition of a sports car?
A sports car?
Do muscle cars qualify? And what is a spider?
Okay, so you have, Jim, if I'm understanding you, you have some muscle car sports cards. Is that correct?
I guess so.
Okay.
Okay, that's non-sports cards. Okay.
Right. All right. And what's a spider? Well, it has many legs and
it's creepy.
So you have no idea. So we've stumped the bet. Jim, congratulations. You've done it again. Thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Well, are you having fun, Bill? You haven't said much lately.
Well, that's because no one's asked me any questions.
About comics.
About comics.
Well, you know, back in the day when I collected the Gold Key, Charlton, they didn't have much value at all. Has anything changed in that regard in 50 years?
Not really, especially with Charlton. Charlton, well,
they were reprints,
kind of a forbidden topic, but Charlton was kind of a mob front.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That would have value then, don't you think?
That would have a lot of value, I would think.
Well, I mean, I talked to somebody who worked for them, and he basically kind of clued me in that, it was basically a kind of a money laundering thing for the mob.
Well, I'll be darned. That's a reason to collect them.
I don't know. They were just about as cheaply produced as you could get.
Yes, I noticed.
They were the only comic company that didn't bother to hire a letterer. that basically they were printed up by, and the letterer was listed in the credits as A. Dot Machine.
Nice. All right, let's go. We have a comic book question here. Chris in Bennington, you're on.
Ray, this is a nerd question, and it's for Bill. It's about comics.
Okay.
Also about how dramatically the prices can change. Bill, hoping you can help me. I have the full collection of the four comics that Alan Moore wrote that are Spawn Wildcats crossovers. Several years ago, they were worth $3,500, and I just looked online, and it looks like they're worth about $10,000. I'm wondering if you know they're near mint. I don't really believe in mint unless they were levitated off of the conveyor belt.
That is absolutely correct. As far as condition goes, the comic books are graded on a 10 scale, and to get a 10 is almost impossible. Usually 9.8 is considered as good as you can get.
Okay.
Most Image comics, especially ones from the 90s, just simply haven't held their value. I mean, you'd be lucky if you could get cover price for them. These crossovers
I noticed that with all the Spawn collections I had, but these I knew were worth just over $3,000 for a little while, and now I'm not sure what they're worth.
You know, I would know it if there was. Now, if these were some sort of limited edition runs of Image comics or signed things, I can see them being worth that kind of money, but just a regular run Image book?
They were special because it was Alan Moore. He only wrote these four, and these were the only four Spawn Wildcats crossovers. It's numbers 1 through 4, actually.
Wow.
He also wrote, I believe, a Violator miniseries as well for Image. He wrote a couple of things for him. He also did a run of Supreme, another Image book. So that wasn't the only stuff he did for Image. But, I mean, that was a 4-issue limited series. There's really nobody looking for it these days. I think you'd be lucky if you could get $10 for them.
Ouch. Well, hang on to them, though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The winds of fortune could shift.
Exactly.
30, 40 years, Chris?
Any idea why they were dropping price so much?
I think it's because they were really grossly overinflated back in the day. Also, I mean, something you have to keep in mind is the significance of something. I mean, the Spawn is still being published, but Wildcats isn't. It hasn't been published in a while. Actually, Wildcats is now owned by DC, and they've completely changed the characters. So that Wildcats really doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So its significance isn't really that great. It's a universe that's been forgotten, essentially.
All right, Chris, thank you for that, and sorry for the profit margin dropping on those. Let's go to Robin in Old Chatham. Robin, you're on.
Hi. I have roughly 7,000 comics from the 80s and 90s that my ex-husband collected. They came straight from the store. He read it once. He shoved it in an acid-free sleeve and stored them. So they're in very good condition, but I don't know what to do with them. I don't speak comic language. I can't figure out what they are. I need help.
Most of us speak English. Okay, 7,000 comics is a sizable collection.
Yeah.
You'd probably want to talk to a serious comic dealer. Even a local store might not be able to handle a collection of that size.
Well, I can figure that, but I don't know how to find. I wouldn't recognize a serious comic guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
You go by the waistline, usually.
How sharper than a serpent's tooth.
I'm sorry about that.
I would recommend going to your local comic store and asking if they would recommend anyone for you. They are the experts in your area, and they would know.
Someone will have to go through all of those, though, right?
Yeah,
to find those
have to go
be a gem or two in there.
Yeah, I mean, would you happen to know the era, roughly? When did he start? Do you know?
He started in the 80s. They're 80s and 90s, mostly 80s,
okay.
Early 80s.
Okay. To pick up a collection of that size, you'd need a serious store or a serious nationwide dealer.
I tried the store where he had the standing order, and they just said, we don't do that.
Really?
Okay,
really?
I get that. But
okay,
I need
that's
somebody who does.
You could ask them if they could recommend anybody. There are a number of comic dealers that exist online. You could, for instance, I bet your local library has a copy of the Overstreet Comic Book Price Guide.
That's a good place to start.
Not only to find out what they're worth, but check the ads.
Oh, great idea.
All the biggest comic book dealers have ads in the Overstreet Guide.
And Robin, you could go through all 7,000 yourself. It'll only take you a couple of years. You could do it.
You might have some gems in there, too.
Yeah, they're it's like you don't know. It's a big grab
bag. You might
have
like two New Mutants number 98s in there just sitting collecting dust.
Oh,
yes,
my gosh.
Absolutely.
Really? Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, listen, I got to tell you, this was a blast, and we'll have to do this again. We're almost out of time. Bill Townsend, how do people find Electric City Comics? Are you guys online?
Yes, we are. You could check our Facebook page.
Okay.
Just Electric City Comics.
All right.
We also have a website, electriccitycomics.com. And you could contact us via email by either of those ways.
Beautiful. And Al, how do we find Al's House of Sports Cards?
You can check me out on Facebook. You can also stop by the shop. It's on Union Street.
Yeah, you know what? I had a great time. This was a lot of fun, and I hope we can do this again. Based on the number of calls we got, we will not have a shortage of people calling. And I apologize to everybody who didn't get through today. We will try to do this once again. Support comes from the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls, reminiscing about Kodak sold Americans on how Kodak sold Americans on America by car, horseback, and on skis in Colorama. HydeCollection.org. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. AGStewardship.org. Penny Farthing, socially responsible investment management of personal retirement and endowment portfolios. Amherst. PennyFarthingInvestment.com, Eric Bright, CFA, and Empire Exhibit and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, supplying the greater capital region with custom display solutions, commercial casework, and interactive exhibits for trade shows, special events, and museum exhibitions, EmpireExhibits.com. Well, thanks again to Bill Townsend and Al Itzkoff for being here today. Thank you for listening. Tremendous calls. We'll do it again. If you didn't make it through, just call a little earlier next time. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Dina Salzman. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's the dead of winter. Let's bring the gardeners back in the studio for a gardening show. Right now, stand by for news.